So, Kishan Babu, what about you?
What is it?
Will you be able to call through internet, whenever next time? Because we have the free conference number, it's a US number, so you will have to call through Skype or Vonage or Hangout. So whenever you are on the conference, you have internet access. Huh? You don't have. Oh, okay. Yeah. So then I think we'll have to let's do it through conference only because. Right now what? अच्छा ओके सो व्हाट यू आर सेइंग इज राइट नाउ यू हैव इंटरनेट हाँ दैट इज व्हाट नो सो सी एवरीवन हैज टू कॉल दैट फ्री कॉन्फ्रेंस नंबर सो सो देयर विल बी नो एडिंग इन कॉन्फ्रेंस थ्रू द फोन देयर विल बी ओनली डायरेक्टली ऑल द डिवोटीज विल बी कॉलिंग दैट कॉमन नंबर Like just as we do in the toll free number. So similarly, all devotees will also call in that toll free. And that is the reason why every devotee should have access to internet for that. So anyways, let's see whatever option will work out next time. If all devotees have internet option, then we can do that also.
I think mostly everyone has internet connection on their mobile.
No, but mobile data pack is expensive, no? And for
Yeah.
2 hours, how will you?
Okay.
Yeah, so.
So, okay, data balance will get deducted.
Yeah, yeah. So everyone has limited data pack. Yeah, so if you are in your house, then only it is possible, I think. So this is the disadvantage of doing through the internet. Yeah. Okay, anyways, let's start now. Almost everyone is here, except Jugnu Mataji and who else? Mohit Prabhu. I don't know if Mohit Prabhu is going to join. Okay, so any questions or any comments from the last class? So does anyone remember what was the ending of the last class?
Prabhuji, you were telling about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the call got disconnected.
Then I was calling, I was speaking,
And you were also waiting.
Okay, so because Sumit Prabhu, he's not joined till now. So maybe he might join. Sumit Prabhu was supposed to call me
Oh,
or
you
you.
assigned him me.
Okay, so anyways, he is actually also traveling today. He's going to Vrindavan, so he'll be calling from the station actually, I think. So Sumit Prabhu was asking question about something related to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the mercy of I was speaking about the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that is why I quoted Bhakti Samrita Thakur. So everyone heard that quote last time. Bhakti Samrita Thakur said one time that if you worship Krishna for thousands of years, then there is a chance you can attain him. And then he says, but if you worship Krishna for thousands and thousands of years, it is difficult to attain Lord Chaitanya. So this is the confidential tattva of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he's extremely merciful, magnanimous. We will discuss that in CC class, and maybe if it is relevant here, then we'll also discuss about that. And then, if you remember, the purport ended with something, in the last lecture. We read that why Krishna's, you know, Goloka is highest in the spiritual world and why Krishna's form is the highest. You remember, right? The Krishna is actually the highest form of Bhagwan, and all other forms are lower to him. So now, actually, if you remember, I had, you know, discussed about the four unique exceptional qualities of Krishna, which even none of the Vishnu incarnation has. So can anyone repeat these four qualities?
Madhurya, Venu Madhurya.
Yeah, two qualities. Okay, then.
Rupa Madhurya.
Rupa Madhurya.
Yeah, third and last. Yeah, Prem Madhurya, correct. So these four qualities are only present in Krishna. And I think it was Nidhi Mataji who said, or maybe someone else, that the living entity has 50 qualities. Mm-hmm. And then you said?
No.
Who said that? Maybe it was Jagjani Mataji? I don't know. So someone said, correct, that the living entity has 50 qualities. who is, you know, represented by Brahma. Then the Shiv Tattva has 55 qualities. Then the Vishnu Tattva has 60 qualities. Okay, so Vishnu Tattva has 5 more qualities than the Shiv Tattva, which Shiva does not have. Okay, and see, one more thing we have to notice, that the 64 qualities, they are not limited. Means, you know, when we say that 64 qualities are there in Krishna, it does not mean only 64 qualities. Krishna has unlimited qualities, but these are the most prominent ones, the major qualities, the 64 ones. Okay. So now, and if you remember, I also said that one of the qualities of Krishna is that only he can give liberation, right? He can bestow the final swarupa of the demons. Only he can bestow liberation to the demons. So Jiva Goswami comments in this context that, so liberation Vishnu can also give, actually. Okay, because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada is translating Gati Dayaka as salvation from, you know, giving salvation from the material world. So actually that salvation is representing Swarga or other places. So what Vishnu can do, he can bestow Swarga or other exalted advanced places to the demons, which normally they do not attain like that. Because if they are demons, then normally okay, I think someone got disconnected. One second. Yeah, Hari Bol. Yeah. So Vishnu can, you know, so the Prabhupada is translating the word Gati Dayaka as salvation. So salvation does not necessarily mean salvation from, you know, the cycle of birth, that old disease, means complete salvation. It can represent Swarga, or it can represent other places, or it can represent Saivarja Mukti also. So Vishnu can provide only Saivarja Mukti at the best. And, you know, and he can bestow only Swarga. But only Krishna can bestow their original Swarupa. And not only that, but Krishna can also bestow them Prema, is, you know, Bhakti, basically. So this is something which is very unique, and no other incarnation gives that. Okay, so now, so this is not the fifth quality, the exceptional quality, because this fifth quality is actually in Vishnu also. But, you know, it is commented further by Rupa Goswami that all the five qualities that are present in Vishnu, they are more wonderfully present in Krishna also. Okay, so when we talk about Krishna's quality of giving ultimate liberation to demons, so that is already included in that five qualities. Okay, its only difference is that he can bestow their original forms and he can give bhakti. Yeah. Okay, so any comment or any question about it? So, Okay, so now why it is said that Krishna is the highest form or Goloka is the highest? Why? Anyone can guess? Is everyone there or?
Like? Yes, Guruji, we are there. We are thinking.
Okay.
Krishna is absolute.
Krishna is what?
Absolute. He's the original person.
Yeah. So Krishna is original person, and obviously he is superior.
Krishna is Sachidananda.
No, but all other forms are also Sachidananda forms.
Okay.
So why Krishna's form is superior? See, we have already discussed these points, right? Like the four unique qualities of Krishna. That is why he is unique. That is why his form is the superior. Right? Because Krishna's form, you know, his rasas endowed with the highest prema. So the rasas are endowed with highest prema in Krishna's form. And that is the reason his form is the superior, more superior form. So as you know, the Acharya said that Krishna is complete in Dwarka, he is more complete in Mathura, and he is most complete in Vrindavan.
Okay.
See, why Vrindavan? Because there is a lot of intimacy. So wherever there is intimacy, the rasa is more. It's more sweet. And it is with the highest prema. Okay, and as we have already discussed, that in order to attain Vaikuntha, you need prema, right? But if you want to go to higher planets, then you need further prema, the advanced level of premas. Okay, so then, you know, after prema, you know, you reach sneha, then you reach man, then you reach pranaya, then you reach rag, then anurag, then bhav, then mahabhav. So the shanta bhaktas, they are, you know, they reach the level of sneha in Krishna, like in Goloka, and then the Vatsala will reach Man, Pranaya, and then like so on, so forth. So the gopis, they will reach, you know, to the border of Mahabhav. And only Srimati Radharani has Mahabhav. Okay. So this also, see, that is the reason it is bestowing the highest prema, Krishna's form. Okay. Now, interestingly, Rupa Goswami also says that the queens of Dwarka, the Dwarka Maheshis. So now how many queens are there, principal queens? 8 queens, right? Does anyone remember, Krishna had how many queens?
16,108.
Huh?
16,108.
Correct. Yeah. So out of that 16,108, you know, the most principal ones are the 8 ones. Yeah, so that 8 queens, so they are satisfied with their prema. Okay. So, in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, 83rd chapter, 41 to 43, so the queens of Dwarka, and specifically Jiva Goswami says that the queens other than the 8 queens, okay, why? Because the other 8 queens, the eight principal queens are satisfied in their rasa with Krishna. But the other 16,100 queens, they are not satisfied. So they are praying to Krishna, you know, to desire the bhava of the Vraj gopis. So they are actually praying for the dust of the feet of the Vraj gopis, actually, in order to attain. So now this is Shastric Praman. Rupa Goswami is providing Shastric Praman to prove that why Krishna is the highest form. And why Goloka is the highest. Okay, so you see, so this is one example that the queens of Dwarka are also praying to the Lord. So now queens of Dwarka, they are at a higher position than the queens of Vaikuntha. So they are praying like that. Okay, then in the Taittiriya Upanishad, you know, the bliss of Brahman, the bliss of material life, material happiness, if you multiply by 100 times, then you reach the bliss of Brahman. So that is the calculation, you know, comparison given, that bliss of happiness in the material world, when you multiply by 100 times, that you reach bliss of Brahman, then that bliss of Brahman you multiply infinite times. So, and you know, then you reach the level of Brahman, you know, like you have no desire, you merge into Brahman. Okay, so so even, you know, they are not actually desiring this kind of bliss, but they are desiring the dust of the feet of Sri. Now, in the original Bhagavatam verse, it is, you know, the Sanskrit is actually representing Sri. So Sri here, now Rup Goswami and Jiva Goswami, they are proving here that Sri here cannot mean the goddess of fortune, or it cannot mean the queens of Dwarka also. And it does not even talk about Rukmini. Okay, so now see, generally many times we have heard that Rukmini is sometimes compared to Radharani, right? We say that Rukmini expansion of Srimati Radharani, but that is only in terms of Shakti, because we know that Satyabhama actually represents Srimati Radharani, because Rukmini has a submissive nature and Radharani has contrary nature. Okay, so Satyabhama is actually an expansion of Radharani and Rukmini is expansion of Chandravali. But you know, at many places you will find sometimes they say that Rukmini is incarnation of Radharani. So actually that means that they are talking about the Shakti aspect. Okay, so this point actually Jiva Goswami is clarifying. And so then, you know, he is actually saying that who is this Sri? In the Bhagavatam verse, you know, the devotees, they are praying to get the dust of the Sri. So it does not refer, it cannot refer to Rukmini, cannot refer to Balka Mahishi, it cannot refer to the goddess of fortune. So this is how they will prove actually. So now, does anyone remember if there is any Praman, evidence from Bhagavatam to prove that, you know, this Sri is actually not goddess of fortune, but it is the gopis of Raj? Does anyone remember? Okay, does anyone know that Lakshmi was also not qualified to enter, you know, Goloka and to participate in the Rasa dance? Does anyone know that?
Yes, Prabhuji, we have an idea of
it. Okay, yeah, so why she could not, you know, if anyone has read Chaitanya Charitamrita, then they will know this answer. So why Lakshmi could not attain that position?
Because she is attached to the position of being a wife.
Oh, yes, very good. Not wife exactly, but to the opulence, to Aishwarya Bhav, to, yeah. So yeah, wife in the sense that one could say that, you know, Swakya Ras, but Swakya Ras is also in Krishna's pastime. So there are some gopis who are married and some who are not married, but still they are in Raj. But Lakshmi could not even enter Raj. So what is the reason for that? So as Nidhi Mataji said, that yeah, it is correct, because she was attached to her opulence, Aishwarya Bhav. And the main reason is what? Why she couldn't enter? Anyone knows the main reason?
Because she is afraid of giving up her position.
Yeah, so she did not want to give up her position, and so then she was asked.
She was not sure that she can attain that position.
Well, she had tried actually, so she did not give up that position. She tried, but she couldn't. So what was that position? You know, what was she trying to do? Okay, so Lakshmi was asked to follow in the footsteps of the gopis, because in order to enter Braj, you have to follow the footsteps of Brajvasis. So because she could not follow means what? She could not do the activities that the Braj gopis do on a, you know, day-to-day basis. Like, you know, extracting milk from the cows, then, using the cow dung and making, you know, many various things from that. So very humble menial position, you know, so that, and at the same time, she did not want to get rid of her opulence. She was very attached to that. So see, now we have to understand that Lakshmi is also a pure devotee, expansion of Srimati Radharani. So in one sense, you know, it is just a leela, basically. So this is actually indicating the glorious position of the gopis. So Lakshmi, see, by quoting Lakshmi's example and by saying that Lakshmi also could not enter Braj, so it actually means that the glory, you know, it is actually indicating the glories of the gopis and Radharani. So they are so glorious that even Lakshmi is not able to attain that position. So this is the meaning, actually. And that is why Lakshmi is taking this kind of role in the leela, to glorify the position of the, you know, Radharani and the gopis. Okay. So any question or comment? Okay. So the Nagpatnis, and you remember in the Bhagavatam, the Nagpatnis prayer, you know, when they're praying to the Lord, so they are also saying that even the goddess of fortune could not attain the Lord Krishna. And then Uddhava is also praying in a similar way, that even the goddess Lakshmi is not able to enter. Yeah. Okay, so now Vishwamitra Thakur says one very important point. He says that the culmination in the rasa of Mahabhav is Krishna and no other incarnation. Okay, so the culmination of all the Mahabhav ras is present in Krishna. Okay, so now we have finished the fourth chapter. Any question or any comment?
Can you do revision? I came late to room.
Oh, you already joined. Okay. When did you join?
Just 5 minutes before.
Okay. Yeah. So we were discussing about Krishna's form. Why is this the most superior form? Because he has four unique qualities that we discussed last time. Then, and more specifically, he is endowed with the highest rasa, the highest prema, basically. His rasa. His ras, all the rasas of Krishna are endowed with the highest prema. Okay, and that is the reason why Krishna is a superior form compared to all others. And you see in the Bhagavatam, you know, everywhere, you know, the devotees are saying that even the goddess of fortune is not able to attain the position of gopis in Raj. So she could not perform austerities, could not follow in the footsteps of gopis. She could not give up her Aishwarya Bhav. Yeah, that is what we have discussed now.
Okay. I have a question.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, yeah.
In the chapter 4, there is a reference to Arjuna tree. Which tree is that, probably?
Okay, can you tell me that exact... Because actually I had read this fourth chapter 2 weeks back, so I don't remember.
I'll tell you. This is at that time the great saint Narada Muni was passing on the road and was sorry to see the behavior.
Oh, okay, I got it. So this is Nallakuvera and Manigriva.
Correct.
Okay, so they came in the form of original trees. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so any other question?
No, probably. What is that Arjuna tree? Which tree is that in this world?
I don't know the English name for that. Anyone knows?
No, but this Arjuna tree, I mean, these barks are used for heart problems ever.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't know the English name. Anyone knows?
What is it used for? Mother's voice is not here.
It is used for heart problems.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I don't know the English name.
No problem.
Yeah, so, okay, any question on this? All right, so let's proceed with our fifth chapter. Okay, so now, see, till now, Rupa Goswami has proved that Krishna consciousness is non, you know, it's not connected to country, caste, you know, like, not at all connected to any of these things. Okay, so society, circumstance, or whatever, like, so then, you know, Prabhupada is actually kind of, you know, bringing about this point of Nityanand Vamsh, that how some caste Goswamis in Navdeep, you know, they believe that whoever are the descendants of Nityanand Prabhu, only they are eligible by birth to preach the glories of Lord Chaitanya, and others are not. So this is also kind of a deviation. And that is the reason, see now, Rupa Goswami, so that is the reason why Prabhupada is quoting Rupa Goswami, that Rupa Goswami was never in support of these things. And he always quoted from Shastra, especially from Bhagavatam and different scriptures, proving that, you know, that Krishna consciousness is not connected to any of these things. So whoever is sincere in a soul, even if he's a, you know, the Malicha Yavana Chandal, even if he can, you know, somehow he chants the holy name of Krishna, then he can come to the highest platform of Brahmanical qualities. So that is the reason here Prabhupada is emphasizing that those who claim like this, they are actually truly not the, you know, followers of Rupa Goswami. Because Rupa Goswami is providing Shastric references. And he is quoting from Padma Puran and Skanda Puran, okay, to prove that whoever chants the holy name of Krishna, you know, is actually elevated to the position of Brahmana automatically. Okay, and these, see, all these Shastic references which talk about the caste and all that, it's, you know, detailed in Sanatana Goswami's Hari Bhakti Vilas. So as we discussed in CC class, that the Panchratrik Vidhi, correct? You know, we were mentioning about that day before yesterday. And we were talking how, you know, the essence of the Vedas was given to Brahma. Then Brahma spoke to Shiva and Shiva spoke to Narada. And then he compiled the Narada Panchratra. So this Narada Panchratra is nothing but the detail of the Panchratrik Vidhi, which is the deity worship in detail. And Sanatana Goswami has actually taken all these, you know, principal points from Narada Panchratra, and he has given them, compiled them in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Okay. So now, further, Prabhupada also says that simply taking Diksha is not sufficient. Like, you know, because Diksha is only the first step towards Krishna consciousness, towards, you know, spiritual life. As we all know, that it's just the initiation, it is the beginning. So why do we call initiation? Because it is a beginning. It is not the end of the spiritual life. Okay, so like, you know, yesterday, like I was talking to a devotee and, you know, he was saying that there are devotees who are initiated, so they are advanced. But so it does not, so anyone who is advanced, you know, initiated, does not mean he's advanced. He's just beginning his spiritual life. Okay, so one has to go a long way. So Prabhupada is saying that unless we follow the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness, you know, and we follow the instruction of spiritual master, we cannot advance in spiritual life, even after initiation. And one more important point is, you know, that now the question is whether one can go back to Godhead without initiation. So what is the answer?
You mentioned, two Goswamis were not initiated at all, but still they followed the Chaitanya to such an extent that they went back to Godhead.
Okay, yeah. So you have answered the main point, that Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, as we have discussed, that they only followed instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without any formal initiation. And obviously, Rupa Sanatana Goswami are like Nitya Siddhas. Okay, so there is no question of them going back to Godhead. So they are just assisting in the Leela.
Yeah.
Okay, but we understand that if you follow in the footsteps of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami by just following the instruction of the spiritual master, making it as life and soul, then one can still go back to Godhead, even without initiation. Okay, so now the question is, so then why initiation is required? Why diksha is required? Huh?
For discipline.
Yeah, okay, very good point.
We can very stick to our chanting, our daily sadhana, daily practice, and daily spiritual practice. We will be disciplined for doing spiritual practice.
Yeah, okay, so that's a good point. Yeah, and so what does it mean? See, if we are practicing to be disciplined, then it means that we are not on the transcendental platform, right? We are still struggling sadhakas.
Correct.
So for that, diksha is required, because we cannot artificially imitate Rupa and Sanatana Goswami.
Correct.
So then we have to follow the principle of Vaidhi Bhakti and then get proper diksha. And because, you know, the diksha is basically what taking vows, you know, in a yagya, in front of the devotees, the deities, the spiritual master. Okay, so because why this is required, so that we will remember throughout our life that we have taken vows, and then only we'll follow it. Okay, otherwise we'll not follow it. So unless we take vows, we won't follow that. So that is our conditioning tendency, right? So that is the reason diksha is required, actually. So now, if someone is following the instruction of the spiritual master throughout his life, but somehow if he is not able to take initiation, then can he go back to Godhead?
Maybe.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, so can you...
If he or she is performing devotional service with discipline, with transcendental vows, in front of deity, in front of Radha Krishna deity, if he or she is giving vows that I will be performing my duties properly, performing my spiritual practice properly, then he or she will be going to back to Godhead, definitely.
Okay, but you know, your answer is good, but you are missing one important point.
Prabhuji, the devotional service should be uninterrupted and without any ulterior motive, that unalloyed devotional service.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. What you are saying is true, that, okay, so let's say that devotion, but you know, there is one very important consideration. This. See, if any devotee is performing unalloyed devotional service, then why he won't take initiation? Right?
First reason will... can I tell him to you? Can I say? First answer is... He or she might be thinking, if I will be taking initiation, then all my sins will be transferred to my Guru Maharaj. So it's very bad to take.
So then you are, what you are saying is that every disciple should never take initiation?
No, they should take initiation, but they should follow the words of Guru Maharaj. What Guru Maharaj said, what Guru Maharaj is saying to their disciples. If the Guru Maharaj is saying that, we should follow four regulative principles, and we should chant 16 rounds, and daily we should approve Prabhupada books, then if they are following the footsteps of the Guru Maharaj, then they are in transcendental position. Otherwise, not. Then they are sinful acts are transferred to their Guru Maharaj.
But if they are following the instruction of their Guru Maharaj, then one of the instructions is also to take initiation, to take diksha, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so then the question is that how can one go without diksha back to Godhead? So what is the main element of deciding whether one will go back to Godhead or not?
If someone has decided to take initiation from some guru, but if the guru leaves his body, then the disciple can go, even if he has not taken initiation.
Okay, so Neeli Mata is referring to our previous discussion which we had. Okay, so yeah, but see, there is one more aspect. That if the guru is leaving the body, then the disciple actually should take initiation from someone else, because one does require a physical presence of a guru. So Diksha Guru is required.
But I think you have said if someone is attached to a particular guru, then...
No, I said if someone is attached to a particular guru, then in the presence of the guru, he won't take initiation from someone else. But if the guru is no longer present, then he has to take initiation.
Correct.
So that is called as Guru Tattva. Guru Tattva is complex. It's complicated. It's not so easy to understand. So see, actually, although you spoke about the guru leaving the body, but it is actually, you can say the other way around, that if a disciple is strictly following the instruction of guru, of Siksha Guru, obviously, because he has not taken initiation yet, but his intention is to get initiated in the future, and he's going in that direction. But unfortunately, if he leaves his body, then if he has served his guru 100%, he's satisfied, then he'll go back to Godhead. Okay, so the intention is very important. So if someone will think that I can do without initiation, so that is also aparadh to the guru, to the orders of the guru. Okay, so then that person, even though he's following the instructions, all of them, but actually he's not following one of them, which is, you know, the Shastra and the Guru, they say that one has to take initiation. So see, Krishna is seeing the bhav and the intention behind every service, every activity. Okay, so if a devotee, you know, is sincerely, genuinely serving the spiritual master, then he will surely take initiation from him. That should be his desire. And if he thinks that, you know, I would not like to take, it's just a formality for me, then that will not, it's not going to help him. So he will take initiation. And if by some accidental chance, you know, he does not, you know, if he passes away or he's not able to finish his initiation in this life, then he will actually continue from the next life. Either he can go back to Godhead, he will go back to Godhead if the guru is sufficiently pleased, or he will continue in the next life and he will accept initiation. This is what Vishwachak Thakur also say in Ajamil's case, where, you know, we were discussing about how to think that, you know, initiation is not required, or the holy name can just deliver us without any initiation also. That is also an offense. Okay, so one should not intend like that. So is this clear? Any questions on this? So Diksha is 100% mandatory. There is no escape from that. So either you take in this life, if you are not able to finish, if you are not able to please your guru, then come the next life, take Diksha, and then, you know. And of course, you know, Diksha is, in one sense, it is a formality, you know, because the sense of Diksha is Siksha. So if you are following the Siksha of the spiritual master, then, you know, then you will attain everything. So in one sense, Diksha is the beginning, because by taking that Diksha, you are formally beginning that relationship. Okay? So like that. Yeah.
In Nectar of Devotion, text number 6, it has been written that observe last second point, ninth point.
Nectar of Devotion, 6th chapter.
Text number 6. Text number 6.
Nectar of Devotion, it's in chapter form, right?
Sorry, chapter 6. Chapter 6, 9th point. 9th point,
okay.
9th point and 10th point. 9th point is, it is that observing the fasting day on Ekadashi.
Yeah.
And 10th point is, it has been that worshipping sacred trees like the banyan tree.
Okay.
So, I'm very much confused because I'm not fasting on Ekadashi, or I'm fasting only Acharya's appearance day or disappearance day. But I never fast on Ekadashi.
So, really?
No, I didn't fast in any Ekadashi.
Then you should begin.
But only I did fast. I'm doing fast on Nirjal Ekadasi. That once in a while.
So you want shortcut?
Huh?
Basically, you want shortcut?
No, I don't want shortcut. But if I'm doing only Nirjal Ekadasi, if I'm not doing any Ekadasi, can I go to Bhakti audit?
Okay. So you are asking question like Bheem said. He could not do any Ekadasi. So
and my and my second question is, if my desire to serve the if my desire to go to Bhakti Garden, but Krishna's desire is to do something for the higher cause. Krishna's desire is to do something very for a higher cause. And
yeah,
my desire
okay.
is to go back to God. So
okay.
it will process, na?
Yeah.
I will be desiring that, are mujhe back to God jana. I want to go to back to God.
Okay.
Lekin Krishna ka desire hai. Krishna's desire is, I want to, he should do something higher cause.
Okay. So, how can you go back to God when Krishna is desiring that you don't go back to God? Because then you have not reached the level of prema. If you reach the level of prema, your desire it becomes one with Krishna's desire. Correct?
Hmm.
So you don't have any separate desire. You know, you just want to please the Lord. So wherever He sends you, in the material world, in the hellish planet, or in Vaikuntha, wherever. So then you have to follow, you know, because your desire is to serve the Lord. You know, and you...
Okay.
So till the time you will have your own desires, then you cannot, you have not crossed the stage of anartha nivritti also. Right? Anartha nivritti and nishta, basically. So you are not there actually. So
correct.
Once you reach the stage of ruchi asakti, then, you know, your desires will start becoming one with the desire of the Lord.
Correct.
Yeah.
That means, if one comes in transcendental platform, then...
Yeah, so transcendental platform means you have to be at the stage. Yeah, it is not transcendental platform. Because your desire is your own, you know, motivation. It is not
Krishna. If Krishna's desire is to me that he should do something for higher cause, then this is the transcendental platform, no?
Yeah, see, when will Krishna desire like that? Okay, when you come to that higher transcendental level, no? Because higher cause means what? Like, so you have to have that potency also, no? You should have that shakti to do. Krishna vina nahi tara pravartana. Krishna shakti vina nahi tara pravartana. Without Krishna's special shakti, you cannot change others. Or you cannot transform others, right? So, yeah, of course, you know. See, for a devotee who is not able to reach the final stages, or he is not able to attain perfection, then Krishna will arrange him to come down to get purified further, and you know, or probably to increase his intensity of devotion, and he will give him another chance. Okay, and for a perfected soul, Krishna sends him for a higher purpose, for a higher cause.
Correct, like God.
Yeah, so Nitya Siddha, they come for a higher purpose, and the sadhakas, they Krishna sends them again because, you know, he has to purify them further. Yeah, okay. So this is answers your second question and the first question of Ekadashi. See, when we advance in spiritual life, so we want to do everything, whatever pleases the Lord. Okay, so we don't want to make shortcuts. So what you are saying that, see, Nirjala Ekadashi benefit you get when you are observing all the Ekadashis, but by mistake, you know, you are like breaking your fast or breaking your Ekadashi by mistake. Okay, so then if you do it Nirjal Ekadashi, then you get the benefit of all other Ekadashis. So in principle, it is correct that, you know, if you are doing Nirjala Ekadashi, Nirjal, without water, you know, then you will get the benefit of all other Ekadashis. But then a Vaishnava's desire is to always please the Lord. Okay.
Correct.
So he won't think that, oh, I have pleased the Lord today. So now, okay, whichever Ekadashi is coming, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to follow. So you imagine if Nirjala Ekadashi is giving so much benefit, how much more benefit you will get from observing all other Ekadashis, right? So the Lord is always seeing the intention of the devotees. So if by mistake, you know, you break that Ekadashi by eating grain, then you can sincerely repent. And Prabhupada said that the devotee should continue his fasting on the next day. Okay, but in ISKCON, what devotees are doing is, if they are doing Nirjala Ekadashi Nirjal, then that itself is, you know, compromising all other Ekadashis, you know, if you break some of them by mistake. And mistake is only once, it cannot be, you know, twice, thrice. So we have to be careful about observing Ekadashi very strictly. We should observe Ekadashis, each and every one of them. Because we want the mercy of the Lord, we want to please the Lord, right? So, and whether you will go back to Godhead by following Nirjala Ekadashi. See, any activity, if you can do offenselessly, then you get the full result of that activity. Okay? So if you are able to follow any of the Ekadashi, what to speak of Nirjala, even if you do some Ekadashi, one Ekadashi also, if you observe offenselessly, then you will get the full benefit of that Ekadashi. Okay. But see, in our movement, in ISKCON, we are actually under Srila Prabhupada and his disciples. So generally, you know, we are seeking the blessings and mercy of our Guru. We are actually dependent on their mercy to go back to Godhead. So I think that in ISKCON, you know, if we are pleasing our Guru, he is happy with our seva, bhakti and all that, then we will go back to Godhead by his mercy. And he is the one who is going to decide, depending on our, you know, whatever service we are rendering to him. So if he is sufficiently pleased, then he can make that adjustment and he can send us back to Godhead. So now, whether we can go back to Godhead on our own, that is not possible, because we are conditioned souls, and whatever sadhana we do, if we follow all the Ekadashi Nirjala, but still we might not go back to Godhead. Because first of all, we won't be able to do it. All Ekadashi Nirjala is very difficult for many years. And even if you are able to do it, still, you know, immediately we'll get pride. And that pride will, you know, kind of, it will nullify the effect of our Ekadashis, the fruit of our Ekadashis, you know, observing Nirjal. So the conditioned souls, you know, they are mostly dependent on the mercy of the spiritual master.
Correct.
Yeah, so yeah, okay, and as we know that ours is a preaching movement. It is not a Bhajanandi movement. It is a Goshtanandi movement. So if you are preaching a lot and, you know, somehow because of that, if you are not able to follow Ekadashi, then still you can go back to Godhead. Now, see, now we are not even discussing about following Ekadashi in a standard way. We are talking about if you are even not able to observe Ekadashi, like you are probably having grains on Ekadashi just for the sake of preaching. Then, you know, if you are preaching like that, you know, very vigorously, then still you can go back to Godhead. Because Krishna is seeing the higher purpose, higher principle.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah. So, any questions or comments by anyone? Okay, so now we'll be discussing something very important. So what further, you know, Rupa Goswami and then Srila Prabhupada talks about is that so, you know, he is quoting Shastra and he's saying that if someone follows someone is following, you know, all the principles of Varna and Ashrama, but if he is unable to follow the important limbs of bhakti, then there are faults attached to it. So faults for not performing all important angas of bhakti. Okay, so what is the meaning of this? And if you are following the important angas of bhakti, but if you are failing or we fall down in our varna and ashrama due to and you know we might commit sin also in that process, but still there is no fault in that because we are performing the important elements of bhakti. So what does this mean? So the Bhagavatam first canto 5th chapter in the verse 17, Narad Muni advises Vyasdev. So that, you know, even if one does not execute his occupational duty, but immediately takes to the feet of Krishna, there will be no fault. And in all circumstances, his position is secure. Even if by some bad association he falls down while executing devotional service, or if he doesn't finish the complete course of devotional service and dies untimely, still he is not at loss. So a person who is simply discharging his occupational duty in Varna and Ashrama, however, with no Krishna consciousness, practically does not gain the true benefit of human life. So does this make sense? Is this logical?
Yes, Guruji.
Yeah, why you know why it is said like this?
Because by performing devotional service, a person is rid of all his obligations.
Okay. Yeah, so that is correct. That by surrendering to the feet of the Lord and by following the principles of bhakti, one starts getting rid from the obligations of this world or the, you know, whatever duties we have. So one is not entitled or subjected to the duties of this world. And at the same time, see, it is important to know that all, whatever angas of bhakti that we perform, they are all connected to the soul. So it is eternally benefiting the soul. It is not a temporary effect, just as the body, you know, like body is actually temporary. So whatever activities we are doing for the body, they're all temporary. Okay, so duties and everything, varna and ashrama, they are actually applicable for the body, right? So that is the reason, even if you fail in performing our duties, but if you are performing bhakti to the Lord, then that remains an eternal asset to our spiritual life. So it can never go in vain. But then, you know, if you are taking care of each and every duty of varna and ashrama, and if you fail to perform bhakti, then it is completely at fault. Complete fault. Okay? Yeah, so which are the important angas of bhakti?
What are the important?
Angas. Angas means the limbs of bhakti. Important limbs. Yeah, okay, so
the question?
Yeah, what are the important limbs of bhakti, the angas of bhakti?
Are chanting? I forgot.
Okay, how many angas are there, first of all?
Bhagavatam.
Yeah, correct.
Nine.
Those correct. Yeah. So these are Navvidhi Bhakti, Navvidha Bhakti. Limbs of Bhakti. They are nine limbs of Bhakti. But there are, you know, the major ones, there are like how many? 64. That is what we'll see in the next chapter, in the sixth chapter.
Okay.
Right? And out of the 64, 20 are important. Most important. And out of the 20, the five are the king of all the 64. Okay, so we'll discuss that in the next chapter. So one cannot, you know, afford to. So basically, the acharyas, they say that when we talk about the you know, the important limbs of bhakti, angas of bhakti. So we are not, they are not referring to the, all the 64 items. So they are referring to the 20 items, and amongst 20 also the five. The five are the most potent and most important angas. So we cannot neglect them. Okay. Okay, so now Srila Vishwachandra Thakur also says that bhakti act, see, now it is said that even if we are not able to perform varna and ashrama duties perfectly, or even to some degree we are not able to perform, then how does bhakti, you know, take care of that? So then Vishwachandra Thakur says that bhakti acts as an atonement for accidental sins due to previous Vaishnava apradhas. Okay, so due to previous Vaishnava apradhas, at the same time also the sins, accidental sins that we commit in our performance of varna and ashram duties. So we might not be able to perform them properly, and there might be sins because of that. And at the same time, the sins which are coming from the previous Vaishnava apradhas. Okay, you remember in the Ajamil past time, we discussed how when devotees commit apradh, and if they have committed sins in the past life. See, because offenseless chanting or offenseless activity destroys all sins, past, present, future. But then, if from that offenseless state, if you fall down to the offensive stage, then the sins will again reappear. Okay, and to the degree the apradh is severe, to that degree the sins will reappear. Okay, so like that. So the bhakti is acting as an atonement, and that is the reason one has, you know, one does not require a separate atonement, or one does not require any austerity to perform. So bhakti is so powerful. Okay, so this is an important point by Vishwanath Thakur. Okay, now in the Bhagavatam, again it is stated, you know, that Rishabdev also to his sons, you know, he talks about the same thing, that whoever fails in his duties but he is, you know, dedicated to the Lord, then he will attain perfection. Then Lord Krishna also speaks to Uddhav, you know, the 11th canto, 11th chapter, 32 verse. So you know, these all verses, they talk about how bhakti is the most important element and everything else is secondary. Okay. In fact, now it is very interesting to know that when Krishna is talking about, you know, he's talking to Uddhav about the different kind of people or the different kind of devotees who perform bhakti. So some have good qualities, you know, and some that do not have good qualities. And the Lord is still glorifying the person who has no good qualities, and he's comparing them to the one who has good qualities. So he's saying that both are satama. Satama means they are the best persons. So even if one, see, there are different categories of devotees. One devotee will perform bhakti with good qualities, and one devotee will perform bhakti without good qualities. And then there are some, they won't perform bhakti, but they will, they have good qualities. So then the Lord is saying that in any case, the first two are almost the same. In fact, the first one is the best, but even the second one is actually considered to be the best. Why? Because his main objective is to please me. So that is why even if he does not have any good quality, all the good qualities will come later on. Okay, so this is what Prabhupada mentions, and Jiva Goswami comments about Satama, the best person. Yeah, so then further Prabhupada says that, you know, as soon as one takes birth in the material world, he is naturally obligated, he has natural obligation towards his family, ancestors, demigods, and, you know, various other things. He is obliged to them. So he has obligation to them. So that is the reason we have to perform so many ritualistic ceremonies, you know, to please the demigods, ancestors and all. Okay, but simply by performing bhakti, one is freed from all these debts. They are no longer obliged. And further, this idea is also narrated to Nimi, you know, one of the nine Yogendras from Karbhajan Muni. So, and then Prabhupada also says further in the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, 66 verse, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraj. So, Prabhupada, you know, he is translating in such a nice way in this purport. He is saying that one should not hesitate, or one should not think that there is flaw when Krishna says that, you know, I will take care of all sinful reactions, do not worry. So, the devotee should have faith. And then the Agastya Samhita says that the devotee of Krishna, they are not required to practice all the rules, rituals and regulative principles of the Shastras. Okay, but they should only follow the bhakti principles. And then further at the end, there is a mention of Karbhajan Muni, how he speaks to Maharaj Nimi about Apichet Sudracharo, that even if someone is committing the most sinful activity, if a devotee commits the most abominable activity, but still he should be considered saintly, you know, because there is no black spot in his character. He is completely, you know, perfect. So, and there is no need to perform any purificatory ceremony, even if someone is committing some sin. Okay, so this, with this, we finish our fifth chapter. So, any question or any comment?
The first part of the chapter.
The fifth chapter?
Fifth chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It is also mentioned that there are three steps to go to spiritual reality. And it says jnana, bhakti and karma.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, if karma is also one of the steps to spirituality,
mm-hmm.
then you keep on doing what you are doing in the material world, then also you go to spiritual world. Okay?
Only thing is, mm-hmm. you should not attach fruits to its actions, na Prabhuji?
That's the difference.
Uh-huh.
Okay, see, here what jnana and karma they are referring to is not the jnana and karma connected to bhakti. So, jnana and karma are the steps leading towards bhakti. Okay, so there is Gyan Mishra Bhakti and there is Karma Mishra Bhakti. So in any case, see, if you are only seeking knowledge, but still you have to have some devotion to the Lord. Okay, because you cannot get the result of that Gyan without having some devotion to the Lord. So, and at the same time, in Karma Gyan, Karma Mishra Bhakti also, when you are doing karma, then obviously you won't expect the reaction for it, the result of it. So for that also you have to depend on the bhakti aspect. So these two are mixed bhakti basically. But the ultimate point is that both of these things, you know, they have to be purified. And for that we have to take shelter of spiritual master. So the spiritual master with his knowledge, you know, he will ask us to perform karma and engage that in Krishna service without any results. So that is the reason the grihasthas are supposed to donate. And Rupa Goswami has given the standard denomination of 50%. One should donate his income to the Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Prabhupada also says, right? So by doing that, and then 25% should be used in emergency, and 25% should be for one's own saving. So if one is able to, if a grihastha is able to do this in his, in his day-to-day work activity, then he can also attain the same status as a, you know, perfect devotee. So a grihastha is supposed to donate, and if he does not do that, then he becomes a grihamedhi. Means that, you know, he will use that savings or money for his own sense gratification. So then Krishna is not in the center. Okay. Yeah, so the spiritual master, seeing your inclination, if he sees that you have inclination to work, you have, or you know, if by that work what you are doing, you are earning a lot of money and you are donating for the cause, so then he will ask you to keep continuing that work, you know, not to leave that. Because if that is your nature, you like it, and if you want to, you know, if you are getting good results for the temple, then, you know, he will ask you to continue. So that becomes devotional service. So that is no longer, provided you, you know, donate at least, you know, whatever is 40% or, you know, standard. So you have to donate. If you don't donate, then it becomes karma. Then you are just entangling yourself in sense gratification. Right?
Right.
So any other questions?
Thank you,
Babaji. Yes, so see, that is very then Bhagavad Gita also, there is a chapter called as Action in Krishna Consciousness. So that is, you know, dovetailing your actions in Krishna service. So see, if that is the desire of the spiritual master, it becomes pure. Okay. But if that is your desire and that is not the desire of your spiritual master, then, you know, he might ask you to continue, you know, because you are attached to the work. So then, you know, and the spiritual master might need you for some other seva, but if you are attached to your work, and so in that sense, you know, it is still mixed with your personal desire. So then, but if the spiritual master, you know, see that you are attached, you know, making your work in Krishna service, you know, if you are able to donate, you know, 40%, whatever you can, then that is there, you know, but still you have your own desire, okay? So it is like that. Generally, spiritual master will engage the disciple according to his nature, because that's how, you know, one can continue to the society for a long time.
What happens? See, in the Guru Mahasaya, there are people who are, you know, done LPs, there are people BMP, there are people 100 rupees. How does the level of differ depending on what land? What happens then? There is a artificial status in the temple also. I'm earning 100 rupees, so I need a similar bureaucracy mostly. We can only donate 25 rupees. He's kind of one level lower. So, I believe in the same kind of people who are not in the number of people.
And they are different for you, or, you know, they have some charges on the table. They have to do the process in the same way. This is a good amount of money, you know, on a yearly basis or, like, you know, regular basis. So they are able to contribute so much to the temple. But you cannot expect the same thing from a devotee who is earning 20,000 a month and, you know, his salary is like, you know, 1,20,000 a year. So how much he can give, you know, because he has so many obligations, you know, he has like, because in Kali Yuga, you know, there are so many fees, tuition fee, then this fee, that fee, you know, then, I mean, what is he going to be able to sustain, you know, like how much he will save the money. So you cannot expect that, you know, he will donate 10,000 per month, right? So, yeah, so that is not practical also. Because in this age, you know, minimum, it is like, you know, 20,000 is like nothing compared to, you know, previous years. You know, like 20,000 is what? Like, it's like 200 rupees now. So then, obviously, you know, they cannot donate so much amount. And that is why, you know, even in ISKCON, the GBC is also not able to decide what should be the minimum percentage to be donated. So they are also not coming to a fixed level because they also understand that, you know, devotees, like, see, if they come up with a norm saying that all Grihastha should donate this much, but they cannot apply the norm to everyone because they know that every individual situation is different. So I think that is left up to or between the guru and the disciple to decide how much they can contribute. Plus, another thing we have to see is that if a Grihastha is earning less, although he might be contributing 50%, let's say, you know, So let's say someone is earning 40,000 a month and he's contributing 20,000 a month, and his the overall contribution for a year will be like, you know, 120,000, right? So but you know, if in the future, you know, if he gets the opportunity to render service full time, then that service is more effective than what he's contributing, because in 1 year he's just contributing 120,000. The same thing, a grihastha devotee who is earning like 1 lakh a month. Now he is contributing 50,000 probably a month. So then his contribution is like, you know, 6 lakhs per year. So that contribution is more. And, you know, the devotee is earning less. His even though he might be donating 50%, but his contribution is kind of low, right? So obviously, you know, we recognize and we praise the amount, the percentage that the devotee is contributing. We don't see the value. But then we have to also see in terms of service to the Lord, that how much effective service I can perform if I do full time, you know, if I leave my job and if I do full time. So then full time means like, you know, every day you are serving the Lord, like, you know, in some way. So if we, like, you know, if you have good, you know, if you are able to preach, if you are able to distribute books in a day, a lot of books, then probably that is something that you should take up. So depending on the situation, I think every devotee has to decide what is their best talent and how to engage that in the service of Lord.
Actually, none of us knew, Prabhuji, so far that 50% had to be donated.
Oh, really?
We all thought that, you know, abhi humne itna de diya, bahut ho gaya. We
have done. Yeah, see, okay. So one important principle in Grihastha Ashram is, you know, Radhanath Maharaj always quotes from Shastra and in his lectures, that he has repeated this many times, that for a grihastha it is extremely important to render humble menial service to the renounced order, and to have very high regard for them, to respect them, because unless the two, and Maharaj even says that to the degree the grihasthas will render service and have high regards for the renunciates, to that degree they will make advancement in spiritual life. So we have to remember this point, because see, whenever, you know, we grihasthas, we are involved with money, so then with money will pride will also easily come.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah, and see, the tendency of conditioned soul is that they are in Kali Yuga, everyone is after money, right? So your demand will be more. You know, see, if you are helping some devotees financially, you are like, you know, okay, for them you are like God, you are like Guru. So they will give you so much respect that they might not even give to their own Guru, because you are just providing them financially. You are helping them. So even, you know, in like while contributing to temple, you know, one might feel that I am contributing so much, you know, to the temple, and all these devotees, they are like, you know, behind me, you know, Prabhu, please help, please help. And probably you are the one, you know, who is doing so much service because of the money. So then naturally the pride can easily creep in. Okay, so that is the reason the grihastha should be very humble. They should actually menially, humbly, they have to serve the renounced orders, the sannyasis and the brahmacharis. They share high regards for them. Yeah, so one grihastha should never feel that he has become more advanced than the sannyasis or the brahmacharis. And at the same time, the sannyasis and brahmacharis should also not be critical of the grihasthas, and they should have high regards for them also, that they are the ones who are actually in the material world, and they are, you know, simultaneously doing material work as well as devotional service. So they are exemplary in their own way. So the brahmachari and sannyasis also should have high regards, and brahmachari and sannyasis, they should not become attached. So they should not demand from the grihasthas. So if someone wants to give donation to the renounced order, then they should accept whatever they are provided. So they should not demand that, you know, you are giving this much, you know. So if you give them, you know, MP3 player, then the, you know, brahmachari or sannyas people, they should not say, I want iPhone or I want, you know, Apple laptop. So they cannot demand like that. I think Nidhi Mataji's phone got disconnected. So we'll just wait. Okay, 1 second. Yeah, Haribol?
Haribol.
Yeah, so Sakshi Mohan Prabhu is still there?
No.
Okay, he might call now.
Yeah, calling.
Yeah.
आपने ज्या उपभोक्ताला कॉल केला आहे त्याने
या हरिमल
लाईन गॉट डिस्कनेक्टेड
या 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 सो यू यू कॅन यू नो यू वी हॅव टू यू नो सो दॅट इज द रिझन यू नो शास्त्र दे आर सो एक्सपर्ट यू नो दे आर व्हेरी शास्त्र रिप्रेझेंट कृष्णाज वर्ड्स सो एव्हरीथिंग इज परफेक्ट इन शास्त्र यू नो अँड दॅट इज द रिझन शास्त्र यू नो व्हॉट एव्हर इट इज गिव्हन वी हॅव टू फॉलो लाईक दॅट. So you see, even during the time of Maharaj Yudhishthir, then Parikshit Maharaj, then Bharat Maharaj, then all other, you know, all the kings, they used to always humbly bow down to the spiritual master, to the Brahmanas, whenever they used to, you know, visit their kingdom. So they used to seek their blessings, they used to serve them menially. And, you know, so this is the proper way to satisfy the Brahmanas. And we have to always be humble. So the Grihasthas are supposed to maintain the other three ashrams, but with, you know, without pride, thinking that, you know, they are servant of the Lord, and, you know, whatever money they have, it is all coming from God for His service. Okay, so they are just instruments. Yeah, so does this make sense?
Yes, okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so any question? Any other?
I have one more question, Prabhuji.
Yeah.
We have this material conception of life. And when we go to a spiritual congregation, Sankirtana movement, when prasad is made and prasad is served, if all the prasad is exhausted, we all feel happy.
Okay.
But then if prasad gets wasted, what should be our feeling? We generally come from the material conception saying that, oh, itna prasad waste ho gaya.
Correct.
Because we feel, you know, valuable resources are getting wasted. But sometimes, you cannot help it.
Yeah.
You never know, you know, you expect 100 people, but only 50 people turn up.
Correct.
So, end of the day, it is a waste.
Yeah.
And many people comment behind the back also, no, you people waste a lot of money.
Okay.
So, what should be the way to look at this?
Yeah, so see, practically speaking, now, see, the devotees should try to minimize the waste. And the way to do is that it's not necessary to cook everything at one stretch. We have to see how many devotees are, like, you know, whenever we go for yatras, so that time we see that, you know, the devotees, they are always cooking. The cooking is continuously going on. So depending on the number of devotees coming, depending on that, they will, you know, cook. So that will actually... So in two ways it is useful. One is that, you know, they will get hot prasadam, you know, fresh prasadam they will get. And second thing is the waste will be minimal, right? Because they are cooking depending on the number of people who are coming. So that should be, you know, that is one possible way to execute, to minimize the wastage. So like that. And second is, if that is not possible, then by experience, you know, by the count of... you know, getting an estimation of how many people are going to attend. So through that experience, you know, through the count, we can understand how many will come. So that's how we can actually do it. Okay. So like, you know, for example, in US, when we were conducting the preaching program, so we used to do everything on our own, like cooking, washing, cleaning, everything, preaching. Okay. So that time devotees were less, and there were only a couple of devotees who were cooking actually. So then, obviously, you know, what we were doing is just estimating, you know, depending on the experience. So if five people will confirm, that means that, you know, probably 10 will come. And, you know, then we make prasad for 10 people. Okay. And then if there is a lot of prasadam, which is, you know, unfortunately, if it is there, then, you know, if there are people around, then we can distribute them, you know, as prasadam. So yeah, so that thing, you know, will come with experience.
Well, Prabhuji, you will not believe, we had to go and dispose it off in the Thane Kadi.
Yeah, what to do, you know, like if we don't get any customers for prasadam, then, you know, that is the only option then.
It was late in the night, so we didn't know. We tried all our usual places.
Yeah, see, that is, yeah, I mean, you know, certain times we cannot avoid that, because let's say, for example, even Govinda's restaurants and, you know, like in the temple also, you know, so, you know, there also, see, even if we take all the precautionary measures, but then there will be people who will be wasting individually in their plates, in the restaurants, right? In Govinda's or any other restaurant.
Yes.
So that is not possible to, you know, we cannot do anything about that. So we cannot, see, first of all, our motive actually to have these restaurants is to actually make them Krishna conscious. And then if we go and tell them that, you know, why did you waste so much? You should not do like that. So they will stop coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then we cannot do anything about it.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, okay. So, anyone else has any question? Okay, so now let's continue with the sixth chapter. Okay, so sixth chapter is important because there is a listing of 64 qualities in this chapter. Right? So now Prabhupada is mentioning here that Sanatana Goswami has already incorporated these things in his Hari Bhakti Vilas. So this is for the guidance of the Vaishnavas, and especially one should note that Hari Bhakti Vilas is specially written for the Smartha Brahmanas, because during those periods there are a lot of Smarthas, and you know they are always seeking some ritualistic kind of things. So that is the reason Sanatana Goswami wrote, you know, directly quoting from the Puranas and Upanishads. So he compiled all this, and the Panchatantra also, you know, he's compiled all these things in a single book called Hari Bhakti Vilas. So then out of the 64 items, there are the most important ones, and then there are some other items which are also important, but most priority is given to the 20 items or the 10 items or the 5 items, you know, so they are the most important ones. So Prabhupada is explaining here that, see, the basic principle, like, you know, while giving the analogy of a disciple surrendering to the spiritual master. So, he's saying that when a disciple is surrendering to the spiritual master, so that surrender, the intention to surrender, you know, that desire to surrender is the most important. And then, you know, whatever, how the spiritual master will instruct the disciple, that is just a detail. But the important principle is to surrender. Okay. So similarly, Rupa Goswami is not entering the details of, you know, each and every item. So these are all the 64 important items that Rupa Goswami is mentioning. So now, is it possible if someone can read the 64 items? Nidhi Mataji or Sakshi Kavadu?
Want to read? Shall I read, Prabhuji?
Yeah, please.
You want me to read the main points, no?
Yeah, start with the second paragraph.
Second paragraph, yeah. Srila Rupa Goswami mentions the basic principles as follows. First one is accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of bona fide spiritual master. Second one is becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. Third one is obeying the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. Fourth one is following in the footsteps of great acharyas under the direction of the spiritual master. Fifth one is inquiring from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. Sixth one, being prepared to give up anything material for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This means that when we are engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, we must be prepared to give up something which we may not like to give up, and also we have to accept something which we may not like to accept. Seventh, residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage like Dwarka or Vrindavana. Eighth is accepting only what is necessary or dealing with the material world only as far as necessary. Ninth one, observing the fasting day on Ekadashi. And tenth is worshipping sacred trees like the banyan tree.
Yeah, so then Prabhupada says that these five items are primarily necessities for beginning the discharge of devotional service in regulative principles. Yes. In the beginning, neophyte devotee observes the above mentioned 10 principles. Surely he will quickly make good advancement in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, so any questions on the 10 items? So you see that the first, first five, they are talking about surrendering to spiritual master, then following his instruction. So this is extremely important. See, now we have to understand one thing, that we know bhavanam janmanam ante gyanvam mam praparante vasudevam sarvam iti mata sudullam, right? We know that out of millions of people, one will endeavor for perfection. Out of those millions, one will actually achieve perfection, and out of those who have achieved perfection, one hardly knows me in truth. So how does one know the Lord in truth?
Guruji, what is the verse you quoted?
Bahunam janmanam ante gyanvam mam prabadyante.
This is Bhagavad Gita, right?
Yeah, Bhagavad Gita.
Is it 7.3?
I don't remember that number. Okay. Yeah.
Bahunam?
Bahunam janmanam ante, after many births.
Yeah.
Gyanvam mam prabadyante.
Okay.
Vasudevam sarvam itim sam atma sudurlab.
7.19,
okay. Yeah, so whatever. So now, see, this concept of accepting a spiritual master and surrendering to him, that is something which is extremely difficult. There is no doubt about that. Don't you think? Don't all of you think? Right, you want to do something, but the spiritual master will say, don't do this, you follow this. You want, so anyone would like to do that? Maximum devotees, they want to do what they want to do.
Yes, sir.
Right, that's, let's be honest, it's very difficult to surrender, there's no doubt. So, see, that is the reason why Prabhupada, if you read his purports, so in Vajran Bhagavatam, in Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, wherever, an act of devotion or wherever it is, Prabhupada has so many times emphasized this point, that unless one surrenders to a spiritual master, or unless one, follows the instruction of spiritual master, one cannot become advanced in spiritual life. So then he also quotes the Bhagavad Gita sloka, Vyavasai Atmika Buddhir Ekei Kuru Nandana. That, and then in that purport he also quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And what does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say about this verse? That one has to be resolute in his purpose to serve Krishna. And that resolution actually is directed towards the spiritual master's order, to make the orders of the spiritual master one's life and soul. And Prabhupada, we see that he was the greatest example of this in his own life, that he followed the instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur as his life and soul. And none other of his godbrothers, they did like that. So Prabhupada's surrender and contribution was the maximum. His output also you can see, right? Who other than Srila Prabhupada became the most successful? Or, who other than Prabhupada was empowered like this? No one, correct? Only because of this reason, that he was completely surrendered to his spiritual master. And he saw it as life and soul, the instruction of the spiritual master. So only, and then the Svetavastara Upanishad also says that yasya deva para bhakti yatha deva tathau guru yasyate kartiya iti artha prakashante mahatmana, that only unto those who have implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Lord, simultaneously, only to those great souls the purpose of all the Vedic literatures are revealed. The essence of all the Vedas is revealed to them. So, many times, we have so much confusion, so much misunderstanding about Shastra. Sometimes we are confused to understand. So, what is the reason? Because we are probably not properly surrendered to the spiritual master, to our Diksha or Siksha Guru. And we don't want to do what they are saying. We just want to follow our own thing. Okay, so for these devotees, although they have taken to Krishna consciousness, but, see, there is no other way to actually progress in spiritual life than to, see, that is the reason Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also in his Mangala prayers, yasya prasada bhagavat prasada yasya prasadan na gati kutopi. Na gati kutopi means you cannot make any advancement if you cannot serve the spiritual master. right? So this is extremely important. One has to always seek, you know, the guidance and blessings of the spiritual master. Otherwise, see what happens if the devotees, they start doing their own thing, then the link of the mercy, you know, or the chain is kind of disconnected in between, and then you are on your own, because since you have not taken shelter of a Vaishnava, so there is no one to take your responsibility. You understand this? So there is a via medium, and that via medium is going to make adjustments for you. He's going to make that special connection with the Lord for you, and then, you know, he has the you know, right to do that. But if we are on our own, then whatever we are doing, it will remain there only. It will not go up, right? Why? Because you have broken that connection. You are not willing to accept that connection. So then, whatever activities you are doing, it will remain to you only. It will not go to Krishna. You understand this point? It's very common sense, logical. If you do not connect a wire and you try to charge your phone, then what? How will the phone be charged? So that wire is always required, no? Or nowadays, Bluetooth, you know, wireless technology. So wireless technology means still, you know, there is some Wi-Fi connection or Bluetooth connection is there. it's still there. That connection is still there, right? So without that, how can one, you know, transfer his devotional service or activities to the Lord? It's not possible. So that is the reason. See, now later Prabhupada is saying, actually, okay, let's read further. You know, Prabhupada will say that.
Shall I read, Prabhuji?
Yeah, so any question or any comment? And see, because we don't have the knowledge, and because we are immature in bhakti, so we don't understand what we should perform, how we should perform. So that is the reason why we require a spiritual master, a guru, you know, so to help us, you know, because see, what happens is, even devotees have a lot of tendency. Sometimes, you know, they will even say to the point that, you know, while, you know, it is Krishna who is personally dictating me from within, or, you know, probably it is the Lord's desire, you know, he wants me to do this. But it might be our own desire, actually. We can never be sure of it. So then the spiritual master is a confirmation, you know, whether the Lord really wants or not. Yeah, so, okay. Yeah, so any questions on this? Is Sumit Prabhu there? Did he connect back?
Prabhuji?
Yeah.
We left before the call disconnected.
Huh?
We left before the call disconnected.
Oh, acha, okay. And is Jugnu Mataji there now, or she still not there?
What, Jugnu Mataji?
Yeah, she has joined or not?
No, Prabhuji, not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so anyways, let's continue. There are no questions. Yeah, please continue, Mataji.
The next set of instructions is listed as follows. First one is, one should rigidly give up the companies of non-devotees. Second one is, one should not instruct a person who is not desirous of accepting devotional service. Third, one should not be very enthusiastic about constructing costly temples or monasteries. Fourth one is, one should not try to read too many books, nor should one develop the idea of earning his livelihood by lecturing on or professionally reciting Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. Fifth one is, one should not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. Sixth one is, one should not be under the spell of lamentation in loss or jubilation in gain. Seventh one is, one should not disrespect the demigods. Eighth one should not give unnecessary trouble to any living entity. Ninth one is, one should carefully avoid the various offenses in chanting the holy name of the Lord or in worshipping the deity in the temple. Tenth one is, one should be very intolerant towards the blasphemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna or his devotee.
Yeah, okay. So now, one should rigidly give up the company of non-devotees. Okay, so the question will be that, but, you know, we have relatives, we have friends, and, you know, they are, like, close to us. So should we just, you know, avoid their company? Should we completely disconnect with them? So the answer is that yes and no, both.
Yes.
So what does it mean that we have to do the needful? We should not take their association if they are not Krishna conscious, and they should not try to us in their, you know, material affairs or material views. So we should not be affected by them. In fact, rather we should affect them by our own Krishna consciousness. So yeah. So you give them their association by giving them KC, and you reject their association by rejecting their materialistic tendencies. Okay, so you have to do whatever you want to do, you know, whatever is required to do. We have to do the needful in the relationship, but then we should not take their association. And that is why it is said that a Vaishnava should never give his heart to a non-devotee. So externally, he might show, you know, proper care, concern, everything, but then one should not give his heart. So that is the meaning of giving up company of non-devotees. Then one should not instruct a person who is not desirous of accepting devotional service. So obviously, you know, to faithless means, you know, someone who does not want to hear, then we cannot give them anything. Okay, so no need to preach to them. So that is the reason Madhyama Adhikari will discriminate who is fit to, you know, bestow mercy and who is not. Then one should not be very enthusiastic about constructing costly temples or monasteries. Now, this is a very interesting question, statement, because we see that in ISKCON itself, you know, there are so many, you know, big temples coming around all over the world. So how to understand this? So what is the meaning of that?
Actually, these days it's becoming a competition, Prabhuji.
Yeah, okay. But is that competition right or is it not correct?
You can argue it both ways.
Okay.
We can think of having humble small temples rather than having such. I was reading the other day in Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
Bangalore ISKCON is constructing the world's tallest ISKCON temple.
Yeah. That. But where is it going to be? In Vrindavan, right?
Yes, in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
Oh, and they are going to spend some 300 crores for that.
Okay.
Oh, it is very difficult to support such thinking.
Okay, so now let's talk about the TOVP, the Temple of Vedic Planetarium, the biggest temple in the entire world, which is about 900 crores.
Right.
And this Prabhupada want directed, right? He directly asked his disciple Ambarish Prabhu, Alfred Ford, to build this temple. So is that wrong?
Yes, Prabhupada has mentioned, so he has a purpose.
Hmm.
But then, because Prabhupada has mentioned and all of us start saying that, you know, I also want to build a world's largest temple, then all the resources will get concentrated only in one place.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, so any other opinions about this from anyone else?
Means our main emphasis should be on the preaching, frankly.
Okay, a very good point. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, any other point? Okay, so see, actually, when it is stated here that one should not be very enthusiastic about constructing costly temples, so the reason why it is stated like this is because when we start constructing costly temples, the tendency is to become attached to the wealth, to the opulence of the temple. Like, remember, in during Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur time, the big bazaar Gaudiya Mart, so that particular Gaudiya Mart, it had marble floorings and everything. It was very nicely made. And what happened is, you know, the brahmacharis were staying, they got attached to that. So they got attached to the, you know, the temple floorings and the temple rooms and everything. And then they started fighting with each other that we would like to have this room. You know, it's very nice. So, and you go, you know, you go and take that austere room. So they were like amongst themselves, they were like, you know, disagreeing, fighting and all that. And that is the reason Bhakti Siddhanta Sarva Thakur said that if I wished, you know, I would have destroyed the entire, you know, temple. I would have taken all the marbles. I would have sold the marbles and I would have distributed books by that money. I would have printed a lot of books and I would have distributed. So at the same time, we know that Prabhupada wanted the biggest temple of ISKCON in the entire world, especially the temple of Vedic Planetarium, right? So now, as Mataji was saying, that the purpose or intention is to preach. And preaching purpose, we might have to build costly temples. See, because if the temple is small-scale temple, it's a, you know, if it is in a forest and if it is like, you know, just one small room, then how many people will like to come? And if there are no facilities in the temple, like, you know, if it's located in a desert, if there is no air conditioning, if it is, you know, if it is very hot in the summer, then how many people will visit the temple? None of them, right? So then, according to time place circumstance, we have to build temple that will attract, because a majority of the people in the world, they are attracted to opulence. Okay, so in order to attract them, we have to see. Now you see in ISKCON new temple, there are people from all over the world coming. And, you know, like every day I go for chanting, I see that every day there are non-Indians coming and visiting the temple. And it has become, one of the seven wonders of Mumbai, actually, one of the most important temples of Bombay. So then when people start coming regularly, then obviously, you know, the preaching is more effective that way. The glories of the temple is spread all over the world and people want to visit the temple. So in that sense, you can say that, you know, the preaching part is there. So yeah, so nothing wrong in, constructing big temples. That is the main purpose. But then one has to be careful. Whoever is constructing a big temple, he should not become attached to it. And he should not run after money. Because obviously we need a lot of money to build temples. So for doing that, you know, we have to meet so many karmis, big people, to ask funds and money. So then one should not become attached to it. So whoever is constructing big temples, if he's detached, then definitely that is real preaching. Okay, so you know, in ISKCON, you know, we have such great, you know, exemplary devotee guru Gopal Krishna Maharaj, that, you know, he has built so many temples, but, you know, at the same time you see that he's so down to earth, very humble, and so detached also at the same time. Never, you know, he's so such an exemplary, you know, Vaishnav, that you cannot even find out, you know, there is no trace of pride in his heart. And, you know, like a, you know, if you talk to him, you know, you understand, you know, like, you know, although he's like the GBC, he's a, you know, he's managing so many temples all over India, but, you know, when you talk to him personally, you know, you won't even get any hint of, you know, what he is actually. He's the, you know, one of the best examples in ISKCON. And then clearly there are others also, you know, who are also doing the same kind of work. So then we can construct, you know, big temples also for preaching. Yeah, so is that clear?
Yes, Guruji.
Yeah, so the intention and the motivation is the most important thing. And see now, although we are discussing the 64 elements of bhakti, we have to always remember that whenever there is a conflict in any of these elements or items, you know, or if it is contradicting, then we have to always, you know, give priority to the highest principle. Okay, so that's how we will be able to make progress. And so, because sometimes we cannot implement all the 64 together, because if we are implementing the 20, then we are not implementing the other 10 or 20 like that. So then we have to see which is going to serve the highest purpose. So that's how we select the items like that. Okay, yeah. One should not try to read too many books. Yeah, so this is also very important. And we have discussed this in our CC class, that even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also does not recommend devotees that they should try to, you know, endeavor to read many books together. So this principle, as we understand, is again, you know, depending on the intention that one should have faith in what, you know, they are reading, basically. So if one is a Vaishnava, then he should only read Vaishnava scriptures. And at the see, so if that Vaishnava, if he's a Kanishtha Adhikari, and if he starts reading other non-Vaishnava scriptures, then he might, his faith might get disturbed. And he might leave, you know, and he might join some other organization. And then if he's a Madhyamaka, then, you know, he has to read for preaching purpose. So that is okay. Okay, and who's Uttama Adhikari, you know, he is expert in Shastra. So he will read everything in context to, in relation to devotional service. So it is like that, you know. So Prabhupada said that four books are very important in our movement. They are the basic books. So anyone who reads the four books, everything is there in that. Okay, so we already discussed Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. So these four books are there. So if someone does not have time to study other books, then these four are enough for them. And they will give someone a Vidya Prayojan, everything. All information is there. So it is sufficient for the lifetime. Okay, but if a devotee has more time, then he can also, you know, read others. But then one thing is absolutely necessary to understand that Prabhupada books are the foundation of our spiritual life, because he is our founder Acharya. So if we do not read his books and we start reading other books, then we are actually not giving proper respects to Srila Prabhupada. Okay, because Prabhupada had his entire life he put in his books. Okay, so in fact, you know, today only I read something really very interesting, and this was you know, quoted by Tamohar Prabhu, one devotee had put on Facebook, that Prabhupada said that actually I am present more in a much more better way in my books than I am physically present, because my books, you know, they are saying everything. So I am actually better way, in a better way I am present in my books. So so we all can imagine, you know, that Prabhupada spent so much time in his books, he did so much to distribute his books, and so we have to read his books. So that is our first priority, to read Prabhupada's books. Yeah. So if we do not read Prabhupada's books, and if we are reading other books, then that is not correct. And we have to read Prabhupada's books first thoroughly. We have to understand it, what Prabhupada wants, what is his intention, what is his mood, MISKCON. And then later on, if we have time, then we can start reading other books, which are also related to our service, or related to, you know, knowledge which is going to be helpful in the future. Okay. Yeah, and then, you know, obviously professionally reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, that should never be done, you know, because that is not the right way. That, you know, we don't take money for giving Bhagavatam class, so that is recited freely. Okay, but now see, at one place Prabhupada had written that the devotees, when they are preaching or they are conducting some seminars, then they should not do it for free, because if you do certain things for free, then people will take it for granted and they will not take it seriously. So better you charge them. So that is the reason you see in Gopinath or in Jhu or wherever, you know, different places around the world, whenever there is seminar going on, you know, we are charging, you know, like 250 rupees, 500 rupees for the seminar, like including big prasadam and all that. So this is also another way to see things, you know, that money counts, you know, money. If you pay the money, then you value the knowledge. And if you get everything for free, then, you know, you just take it for granted. Okay. So, but especially Srimad Bhagavatam recitation should be done without money. So you see, in all our ISKCON temples, we are reciting Bhagavatam without any charge. Anyone can come and hear. Right? So this is a perfect balance, that you want to preach to people, but then in order to preach, we have to discriminate also, no? That who is innocent and who is envious. And we don't want to entertain everyone because we have limited time. So then if you charge them something, and see, majority of the people, they come for prasadam, especially in the, you know, non-Indian countries, because there, you know, the prasadam facility is not there, right? As we have here. Here has their own, you know, prasadam facilities and all. So they are not bothered so much about prasadam. Okay, so then if we charge them, then, you know, they will come for the knowledge that they, yeah, so like that. So it is a balance system. And then at the same time, income is always available for free. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so any comments on this? Any question? Okay. All right, let's move ahead.
Since tomorrow is a working day.
Yeah.
Shall we have an early close?
Yeah, we will have early close only. We'll just finish this. Maybe in bits we'll finish.
Oh.
And okay, so then later on, see, now here Prabhupada is mentioning, our Rupa Goswami is mentioning here, without following the above mentioned 10 principles, one cannot properly elevate himself to the platform of Sadhana. Altogether, Rupa Goswami mentioned 20 items, and all of them are very important. But out of the 20, the first three, namely the accepting shelter of spiritual master, taking initiation from him, and serving him with respect and reverence are most important. Correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so this we have to always keep in mind, that this is the foremost, you know, item. Then forget, you know, even if you're following the other ones, but still it won't be purpose as long as we are not following the, you know, these three ones. Yeah, okay, so Mataji, please continue.
The next important items are as follows. One should decorate the body with marker, which is sign of Vaishnava. The idea is that as soon as a person sees mark on the body of a Vaishnava, he'll immediately remember Krishna. Lord Chaitanya said that a Vaishnava is he who, when seen, reminds one of Krishna. Therefore, it is essential that a Vaishnava mark his body with tilaka to remind others of Hare Krishna. Second one, in marking such tilaka, sometimes one may write Hare Krishna on the body. One should accept flowers and garlands that have been of the deity and the spiritual master and put them on one's body. One should learn to dance before the deity. One should learn to bow down immediately upon seeing the deity or the spiritual master. As soon as one visits the temple of Lord Krishna, one must stand up. When the deity is being borne stall in the street, a devotee should immediately follow the procession. In this connection, it may be noted that in the India, especially in Vishnu temples, the system is that apart from the big deity who is permanently situated in the main area of the temple, there is a set of smaller deities which are taken in the procession in the evening. In some temples, it is a custom to hold a big procession in the evening with a band playing and a nice big umbrella over the deities, who sit on decorated thrones of the calf or palanquin, which is carried by devotees. The deities come out onto the street and travel in the woods, while the people of the neighborhood come out to offer prasada. The residents of the neighborhood all follow the procession, so it is a very nice scene. When the deities coming out, the servitors in the temple put forward the daily account before them. So much was the collection, so much was the expenditure. The whole idea is that the deity is considered to be the proprietor of the whole establishment, and all the priests and other people taking care of the temple are considered to be the servant deity. This system is very, very old and still followed. So therefore, it is mentioned here that when the deity is on the stroll, the people should follow behind. A devotee must visit a Vishnu temple at least once or twice every day, morning and evening. In Vrindavana, this system is followed very strictly. All the devotees in town go every morning and evening to visit different temples. There are considerable crowds all over the city. There are about 5,000 temples in Vrindavan city. Of course, it is not possible to visit all the temples, but there are at least one dozen very big and important temples which were stated by the Goswamis and which should be visited. One circumambulate the temple building at least three times. In every temple, there is an arrangement to go around the temple at least three times. Some devotees go around more than three times, 10 times, according to their vows. The Goswamis used to circumambulate Govardhana Hill. One should also circumambulate the whole Vrindavan area. One must worship the deity in the temple according to the regulative principles. Offering aarti and prasada, decorating the deity, etc. These things must be observed regularly. One must render personal service to the deity. One must sing. One must perform tana. One must chant. One must offer prayers. One must recite notable prayers. One must take mahaprasada, food from the very plate offered before the deity. One must drink charanamrut, water from the bathing of the deities which is offered to guests. One must smell the incense the flowers offered to the deity. 20th one, one must touch the lotus feet of deity. One must see the deity with great devotion. One must offer aarti at different times. One must hear about the Lord and his pastimes from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita and similar books. One must pray to the deity for his mercy. One should remember the deity. One should meditate upon the deity. One should render some voluntary service. One should think of the Lord as one's friend. One should offer everything to the Lord. One should offer a favorite article such as food or a garment. One should take risk and perform all endeavors for Krishna's benefit. In every condition, one should be a one-handed soul. One should pour water on the Tulsi tree. One should regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam and similar literature. One should live in a secret place like Mathura, Vrindavan or Dwarka. One should offer service to Vaishnava. One should arrange one's devotional service according to one's means. In the month of Kartika, that is in October and November, one should make arrangements for special services. During Janmashtami, the time of Krishna's appearance in this world, one should observe his service. One should do whatever is done with great care and devotion for the deity. One should relish devotees and not among outsiders. One should associate with devotees who are considered more, and one should live in the jurisdiction of Mathura.
Okay, so you, out of these 40 items, 44 items, did you recognize that the most important ones were at the last five, correct?
Yes.
So Prabhupada says the total regulated principles come to aggregate of 64. As we have mentioned, the first are the primary 10, then come the secondary 10, and added to these are the 44. So altogether 64 items. And out of these 64, the five items, the deity worship, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees,
केलेला क्रमांक सध्या दुसरा.
Yeah, so sometimes living in Mathura is compared to worshipping Tulsi Devi, because wherever Tulsi is residing, that is not different from Vrindavan. So the 64 items of devotional service, they all include the activities of body, mind. Okay, so they have to be employed in the service of Lord. Exactly how they can be employed, at the same time, in the next, chapters, Rupa Goswami will evidence from different scriptures supporting the authenticity of all these points. Okay. So one cannot avoid the five most points: the deity worship, then Bhagavatam, association, Sankirtan, and Mathura. So the five most topmost. So now living in Mathura Vrindavan is actually, is a principle which is depending on the consciousness. So as many times Prabhupada said that Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. You can create Vrindavan wherever you are. It is a matter of creating Vrindavan in your heart. So you have to. So if you are preaching, then you when you go to Vraj, then you take the spirit of Vrindavan, and then wherever you go, you take that spirit in your heart and you distribute to others. So Prabhupada of time that I would like to die in Vrindavan. But then a couple of times he also said that wherever I die, that will be Vrindavan. I want to die preaching, Prabhupada said like this many times. So different places, different statements. The thing was always common that, he said that Vrindavan is a state of heart, is a state of consciousness. So we have to have the consciousness of, living in Vrindavan. So everything has to be judged. See, all these judged or understood according to the direction of the spiritual master. See, now, I have understood these things from my spiritual master, and devotees. So then I am trying to explain to you all, right? So, for example, we are talking about the construction of costly temples. And then, obviously, if you once reach this, then, they will have this understanding that we should never aim for costly temples. Yeah, okay. So, one could get confused that, why costly temples, they are not sanctioned by Rupa Goswami, but then we see that, it is done in ISKCON. So then we require the guidance of spiritual masters who can explain us the contradictions. They can resolve the contradictions. Okay, so all these items are contradictory, then we have to resolve it through the eyes of the Guru. Okay. Yeah, so... any final, comments, questions before we end today? Okay. So see, we have to understand that the first one is Naam Sankirtan, according to the priority. Okay. Then the second will come with association of devotees. Then third is Srimad Bhagavatam. Then the fourth is worshipping the deities. And the last one is living. Okay. So these, amongst four, among these five also, if you are not able to execute the four, this Sankirtan, you know, Naam, Chapa and Kirtan. And if you are able to execute only two, association. Okay, so like that, the priority is given. So, so all these things, you know, we can try to do, implement in our life. This is. So, and then it is also said, Charanamrit. Charanamrit, then the remnants of the, you know, footsteps of pure devotees, the feet of the Vaishnavas. They are very, very potent items, you know, for spiritual life. So, yeah, so these are also the items. Yeah, so, okay. All right, so anyone else?
Prabhuji, the 37th one, one should arrange one's devoting to one's means. Can you explain that? 37th.
One should arrange one's devotional service according to one's means. Whatever capacity one has, according to that, one can arrange their devotional service in the guide, under the guidance of the church. So, if someone is, if one does not have association of devotees, if one does not have deities at home, so one's family is not devotee, so then whatever, you know, by whatever means they are able to serve the Lord. So, it can be anything. If you have deities, then you serve the deities, you know. See, in Kali Yuga, Naam Sankirtan is the essential element. And there is very important point. Generally, the Diksha, you know, in previous Yugas, actually the Diksha was actually prior to the Siksha, which means that take initiation first and then acquire knowledge. But then the Acharyas say that in Kali Yuga, because it's the most prominent in this Yuga, so it's not required that the Diksha should come from. Okay, so what does it mean? That, see, in ISKCON also, we are not taking Diksha, Bhagavad Gita, through many scriptures, and like, you know, we have this Bhakti Shastri, and after that, one Diksha. So this was not earlier. Okay, this process was not earlier, because once you take, then you know, acquire knowledge, because, you know, you get qualification to read the Vedas. So it is not because of Naam Sankirtan, it's not required. Yeah, so this is how we have, like, that, depending on where we are, according to time and circumstance, whatever, under the guidance of the devotees. Okay. Yeah, so does that answer your question?
Yes, Prabhuji, thank you.
Okay, then Vishwanath Thakur also say, you know, among in the process of deity worship, there are many angas. Okay. But they are not further classified or described. Because those angas, they represent the unit of deity worship. So that is given in this 64 item. Then Vishwanath Thakur further says that, you know, while course of performing seva or chanting the name, there will be seva and nama prats by everyone. Okay, a very interesting point, that to perform this seva and nama prats. But then one should be careful not to perform it again. Okay. Yeah, so these are the points which the Acharyas have shared. Yeah, so, yeah, okay. So, any last, final question? Okay, all right. So, we'll have discussion next week. Thank you for joining. Dhanvat Pranam Krishna.
Dhanvat Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you.